Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Let's start with the actual fight. All right, few people do what they do what they say they're going to do. Talk is cheap, and most people run their mouths like they're billionaires. Tyson Fury isn't like most people. He means what he says. Last week, he told the world that he added extra weight because he planned on knocking out Deontay Wilder in their highly anticipated rematch. Fury, who weighed in 17 pounds heavier than the last time he fought Wilder, promised a second-round knockout. Saturday night, in the third round, Fury unleashed a right hand to the ear of Wilder that in reality ended the fight. Wilder collapsed to the ground, blood dripped from his ear, and he was a shot fighter stumbling around the ring for the next four rounds. Wilder's corner men eventually threw in the towel in the seventh round. The surrender certainly saved Wilder from further embarrassment, and who knows, it may have saved Wilder's life. We've now seen Wilder and Fury fight for 19 rounds and roughly 62 minutes. Fury has been dominant in about 60 of those 62 minutes. Save for a couple of right hands in the first fight, Wilder has done nothing to demonstrate that he's in the same class as Fury. You can be disappointed with Deontay Wilder. I get it. His lack of boxing skill, footwork, defense, punching combinations are all now very easy to see. He's the antithesis of Larry Holmes, the heavyweight king who ran his record of 48-0 with a Floyd Mayweather-like technique and skill. Wilder is a one-punch fighter who miraculously made it to 42-0-1 without ever learning to box. But Wilder's lack of skill isn't the story from Saturday night. Fury's redemption, rise, and crowning are what we should remember and celebrate. A man that means what he says and follows through is rare in this era of male emasculation. I did not like Fury before Saturday night. I didn't get him. I thought he was bluffing about knocking out Wilder. I thought it was a head game. A few hours before the fight, I read a tweet from a boxing expert lambasting Fury for keeping his shirt on during the weigh-in. The tweet provoked me to rush to the sportsbook and place a significant bet on Wilder. Stick around later in the show. I'm sure Uncle Jimmy will give me Big Dummy of the Day for the impulsive bet. My mother always says there's nothing better than a bought lesson. I learned to respect Tyson Fury the expensive way. The Gypsy King will never again fool me. All hell, Tyson Fury. All right, joining the desk now are TJ Houshmandzadeh and two-time former welterweight world champion Andre Berto. Marcellus, get us rolling. Impressed by Fury or disappointed in Wilder?
Impressed by Fury, like you said, man. The fact that he laid out that architecture, that game plan, professed it, and then went out there and mastered it, perfected it in front of millions to watch. Got to be impressed by that. Deontay Wilder got exposed for being a great fighter, but not a great enough boxer. And if you look at his game plan that didn't have complexities in plan B or plan C, that's when you get exposed. And what I think he ran into is somebody who had even greater skill, but even greater will. And In sports, it's hard to convey that to people because when you're young, you get picked, hand-picked, cherry-picked because of talent. And that's plan A. And a lot of people ride that natural talent all the way to the professional level. But sooner or later, you'll meet the guy in disguise who didn't have that same level of talent. But boy, does he want it. And boy, did he learn fundamentals. And maybe he wasn't as heralded. But boy, when you meet him in those moments of will and contest, good luck trying to climb out of the same depths of despair that we saw Tyson Fury did. So I'm just impressed all around. The mental makeup, the physical skill set, and the way that he exposed them by just using his craft.
For me, I'm impressed with Fury as well. I'm not disappointed in Deontay. Deontay has shown us he can lose round after round after round after round and still knock you out. And so for me, Deontay said it himself leading up to the first fight. You got to fear a man that tells you what he's going to do and then goes into the ring and does it. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Fury said, I'm going to rough him up and I'm going to knock him out. And I, like everybody else, was like, oh, he's just talking. He's going to run around
wolf
the ring.
Tickets.
I thought he was selling wolf tickets. Mm-hmm. And he did just that. For me, I felt in the first fight, the ref robbed Wilder of a knockout. So it would be 1-1, and the trilogy would make it that much more impressive. Didn't happen. Am I disappointed? No. This is sports. The better man won. It just wasn't your night, and that's what happened Saturday night.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm just like you said, I'm definitely impressed by Tyson Fury. You know, and I was one of those guys that really thought that he was going to be selling wolf tickets, but he really stood up to the occasion. It was a packed house. And from the opening bell, that's what I loved about it. From the opening bell, he stepped right to Wilder. He didn't care what was going on. He didn't care about the atmosphere. He didn't care about the punching power. He was fearless. He was fearless. That's what you need in this game, especially when it comes to big environments like that, like the big stage, the big atmosphere. He just walked straight to Wilder. He showed him everything that I told you I was going to do. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in front of everyone. And that's what he did, and I believe that Deontay Wilder, he felt that presence. I felt that he got a little intimidated by it, and he started to crumble.
Andre, you said, though, that you bet on Fury. You thought he was going to win. Yeah. You just didn't think he was going to win by knockout.
I didn't think he was going to win by knockout. I seen glimpses of it. If he stuck to his word and stepped up to Wilder, I seen glimpses of it the first fight. Every time, you know, he walked up to Wilder, he stepped up to Wilder, he put a little pressure on Wilder. He kind of flustered a little bit, but he just stepped back and went back to boxing. He tried to stick to his game plan. And I knew in my mind that if he really stuck to this, that he was going to open Wilder up to a lot of different situations.
What I find most impressive to me is listening to everything he said in retrospect, he was not remotely lying in terms of, he's like, man, I beat this guy after dropping 100 pounds. Yeah. I carried a bad 255 pounds in the first fight. This 270 is actually a good 270.
Yeah.
And I know as an athlete, you can relate to that, being in shape at 255 or 270 and being out of shape at 250.
Yeah.
This guy had a confidence of his game plan and what he could do. It's like, I've already survived his best two punches.
I think he's seen something, too, though. I think he's seen something within that first fight. Every time Deontay, you know, that he was, you know, knocking down that fight, it was just from that one punch. And he knew that he had the agility to dodge that, and I believe he put that exercise on. He used every bit of it as well for that fight. Every chance that he got to get close to Wilder,
he laid on him.
He stood on the outside and boxed him. You know, he let Deontay feel, you know, his presence. He did a lot of feints. He did a lot of great jabs. And every time that he got too close, he laid that extra weight on him because he seen Deontay's legs were just, you know, I mean, they were all over the place. He used every bit of it. And I think it was just amazing how he, you know, shifted the whole game plan in this fight.
For me, what's more amazing than what we saw is the mental warfare that obviously Tyson Fury was particularly paying in to a higher level than all of us even took witness to, and certainly his opponent, Deontay Wilder.
Yep.
Here's the mental warfare. First, I'm going to revise my game plan. that wasn't met with failure. I didn't lose. Mm. I had a draw, but in my mind, I know I could have done better. Exactly. So to have that confidence to say, I'm going to go to Kronk, be offensive, and why am I going to be offensive? Because I've outboxed this guy for every round except the two times he caught me slipping. Mm. And in his mind, it was truly slipping. He's like, if I take the fight to him instead of being like most people, staying on the outside in fear of what he's going to respond with and counterpunching or the devastating right, I got him.
Yeah.
Then you look at it, what happened is he dug into a deeper depth of despair than even Deontay Wilder could. Now, everyone always talks about adversity, and you're from this neighborhood, you went through these upbringings, you went through this shortcomings, and that's external. Yeah. Like, oh, you from Compton. Oh, yeah. Okay, I saw a lot. Yeah. But within me, I had a...
At the end of the day, you know the truth.
Man, and I was... You know and the I was truth I protected myself going through those external circumstances. Tyson Fury internally went there. The adversity, the graffiti, the violence, everything went into him. And he climbed from a 400-pound man out of boxing to the tune of, I'm a draw with you at 255 bad weight? You don't stand a chance when we get back together
this,
on level
this what happened field. Was... Deontay built his reputation on fear and punching power. Yeah. Tyson Fury stepped to him, and like Andre Ward told me Saturday night, he undressed him. Mm. And Lennox Lewis, I owe you $100, I'm gonna get you that money. He told me on Friday, he was like, this is what they teach in the Kronk gym. He almost knocked me out. He was just touching me in my chest. I'm like, Lennox. And this is what Tyson's gonna do. When he steps to him, he's gonna step to him with all his weight behind it. And everybody thought, Tyson, you felt you won the first fight. Why would you change your game plan if you felt? Yeah. And he changed his game plan because he wanted to leave no doubt. I changed my game plan not because I want to leave no doubt. Yeah. I was shocked, but Wilder, you live to fight another day, man. Like, we all going to lose. Yeah. Eventually, somebody.
That's where I have a problem. Are we all going to live to fight another day at the same level? Once Mike Tyson got hit, and once we saw what happened in Japan.
Once you get undressed, you can't put your clothes back on.
Once they show the gooch and different strokes, he wasn't scary no more.
You're a boxer, you've lost. No. Yes. And explain that to us coming back from that.
This right here is gonna, we're gonna have to be able to see how Wilder's gonna be able to come back from this. Because just like a lot of, you know, like top-notch guys, just like even myself at the time, being undefeated, being world champion, I took my first loss. It was tough for me to get back because I came from, you know, the mental standpoint of I'm too fast, I'm too strong, no one can beat me. And being in the place to, you know, like being in that space to have somebody take that confidence from you, it's hard to get back to the place that you're.
Let me ask this.
Doubting yourself.
Do we want to see a third fight here?
Of course.
No. Of course.
Let's hear why. Of course. Why? Not right now. You talking about next? Run it back?
Why not?
I'm going to tell you why not.
Why not?
His invincibility was his punch. You're like right. Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas. That's a punch. You're that keeps people on the outside not playing their game. Yeah. And now that's been crumbled. Before
he still has that punch,
Has that punch.
I know that he could get him with a one-hitter quitter, but is he built back to that place?
We need to give him that chance to be able to see if he's going to be able to come back from that. Because just like you've seen...
Giving him that chance is different from wanting to see it. Do you want to see
it? I like to see it.
Look, man.
Seeing the first fight was exciting. Every time he hit, you know, Fury, he dropped him. You know.
Twice.
This he hit right him here, twice. Now, this fight right here, it was, you know, it is what it was.
That's right.
But you have to give him a chance to try
when
to
you
make it
fall
do what
from such heights, and you said you did it. When you fall and they say you want to get back up there, yes. But guess what you have to do? Let's climb back up there. Just to make sure every level of this, you're ready for it.
Everybody's different.
Everybody's there.
His mentality. Now, I don't know Deontay Wilder personally, but if you have that mentality that he portrays and he makes us believe, he's gonna want it next. Now, he said he went into the fight with problems. If in his heart of hearts, he truly feels like he wasn't 100%, if he is 100%, he feels like he can win that fight. True. We as athletes, if you know you're not there.
Answer the question.
I do.
Why?
I do. Because he's led me to believe he had problems going into the fight. If you had problems...
That's like Pacquiao talking about my shoulder hurt against Mayweather. How about you couldn't hit him, dog?
After the second round, I'm sitting here watching the fight, and he looked like one of them fawns that just been born when they get up out. and they try to walk around. His legs were unsteady after the second round.
And another thing with that, too, stop, just me being a fighter and me going in these training camps, what I didn't like was the fact that he had both fights so close. He just fought Ortiz in November. You need to understand, as a fighter, these 8-9-week training camps are grueling. He really didn't have a great chance to recover. It hopped right into another tough training
camp. See, look how y'all flip it.
No, I did hear that.
But when it works, guess what they say? Oh, he got a shape on top of shape. That was the pre-fight. You on shape on top of shape. And now all of a sudden,
these training camps are a lot longer, a lot bigger, a lot more.
I want to clarify my question. You've made a decent point because I've heard other fighters say that night that he needed more time. The problem, though, is, and this is why do you want to see it? I mean, hardcore fight fans up here. But that fight this weekend attracted the nonchalant fan. And that's what I'm saying, like, if they run it back, I think that nonchalant on it is like, nah, I already seen that. I know what that's about.
And again,
you had all the superstars, celebrities. That was a big time heavyweight fight. Yeah. That's why the heavyweights are so important. When they step into the ring, everybody comes. A big cross section. I just don't know if you can sell the third fight at the same level as you just sold 2.0.
To your point, that was the biggest gate in heavyweight history. Yeah. So we know that the numbers support it. However, would the story support it? Whether he fight Fury Joshua, to me, is easier to sell right now because we haven't
seen.
Were
they selling that in England?
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
But like, even
80,000 Wembley?
Even if they have a rematch and Wilder and Fury go to England fight, 100,000 easy.
I'm with you. It's but wouldn't you want to see something else to build up your confidence
in Wilder right now? There's only three heavyweights right now.
That's why I say go to Joshua.
Round robin.
But anything get lost, anything be able to be lost in that situation as well. You're talking about, you know, Wilder not knowing if he's confident, if not knowing if he might fight another fight, just try to build his confidence and lose.
Yeah, Joshua. That's what happened to Joshua. You know, Joshua's out there just trying to be the
He's got to do that, though, to so me. In order to sell the fight, he's got to demonstrate to the boxing. But he's got to get guys like me to believe he has some boxing skill.
One thing when it comes to boxing,
say it.
If you guys don't know yet, any type of marketing, promotion that are going to build, any fight that you want to build, you know, and Floyd Mayweather has shown that for years and years and years and years. You know, I mean, him fighting guys that people feel like he shouldn't be fighting
at all.
He lost one fight.
Well, Sugar Ray Leonard has lost. Muhammad Ali
Sugar
has
Ray
lost.
Leonard never lost like this. Show me a tape of Sugar Ray Leonard.
That somebody walked up and said he got undressed.
For seven rounds.
He's lost. It's unfair.
Bucket naked.
Terry Norris undressed him. That was at the end of his career.
That wasn't this.
It's one loss. It's one loss.
Let the man come back. Let him show what he's all about. Of course, we would definitely say, hey, you know, just build yourself up. Let's go ahead and just, you know, just.
I'm just talking about selling the fight. I'm into the pageantry, the whole thing. The weekend was awesome.
Yeah.
And so, again, now, to me, if they run this back, we just going to have a fight.
How crazy.
Them same people ain't showing up.
How crazy is this? The ball is in Wilder's court to sign on. What kind of insane pressure is that? Like, I got to sign on. If not, I'm chicken to it.
He's basically already said I want to run it back.
Yeah, he don't have to run it back.
They're going
to
run it back,
especially him just being the type of man he is. He has too much pride, too much ego. He's going to want to run it.
He ain't going to see the same outfits at the next fight. I'm just telling you that. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Muscle pain? I'm talking stop in your tracks. I'll never work out again. Oh, my God, what am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Our handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. It's this simple. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and is used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/kick. Cadence. For a limited time, listeners to Speak for Yourself get a free charging stand with the purchase, a $79 value. That's Theragun.com/Cadence. Theragun.com/Cadence. Cadence.
Whitlock and Wiley joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and TJ Husmanzadeh. Time now for a big story presented by Hyundai. Let's move to Tennessee, where the Titans appear to be gearing up to make a run at Tom Brady. According to ESPN's Dan Graziano and Adam Schefter, Tennessee should be among the front runners to land Brady in free agency, despite the fact that they just got a career year out of Ryan Tannehill. If you look at the numbers, despite New England's record, Tannehill outplayed the 42-year-old this year, winning two games in the playoffs, including beating the Patriots. He also had a much higher completion percentage and led the NFL in passer rating. I want to add, my boy Jeff Darlington, also of ESPN, was someone that says Tennessee's a front runner. Mm. Is Brady a better option for the Titans than Ryan Tannehill?
Nope, not in the short term, not in the long term, not based on what we just saw in numbers. You talk about a Ryan Tannehill who tried to enter the MVP conversation late based on his late season performances, and he wasn't even brought in as the number one. He was brought in as a backup, went through an offseason as a backup, training camp as a backup. Now you have that MVP caliber type of half season, and you get to take him as your number one in the offseason. Don't even think about Tom Brady, short term, long term. It's Ryan Tannehill. Mm.
I think it's Tannehill as well. I know you guys are sitting there thinking that I'm going to go with Tom Brady. But because I'm always honest. I mean, honestly speaking, I don't think that this is a better move to bring in Tom Brady.
Always honest.
I'm about to say, we just went to Vegas. He talking about he always
honest. Go ahead, Pinocchio. I mean, go ahead.
He got potential. Tom Brady going to Tennessee has potential.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that Tannehill has done what he's needed to do being brought into the situation that he was brought into. And you just moved on from Mariota. So to make that move, I would assume you would do it with someone that you can build into the future with, not a short-term play. So I don't like the move.
Yeah, I actually – he'd be a better option. The Tennessee Titans basically thrived in the late season, regular season, and in the playoffs because of Derrick Henry, not because of Ryan Tannehill. And if you look at the playoffs, they couldn't really throw the ball. They couldn't throw the ball effectively. If you get Tom Brady with that type of running game and that defense, as accurate as he is he a better option? Absolutely he You play good defense. They got a good O-line. They can run the ball. Tom Brady's going to put the ball on the money. They get eight-man fronts, single high safety. Tom Brady would eat that up.
I think TJ makes a fine point that has some truth to it in terms of when you go look at Tannehill in the postseason, he backed off. He didn't have to do a lot because Derrick Henry did so much. But I think Tennessee's doing that calculus, that evaluation of would Tom Brady be better for us in the postseason? Was this a guy that just had a nice run? Is he a different version of Nick Foles? Had a nice run, but should you really invest your future? And so for me, this all comes down to price. If Ryan Tannehill wants to take $23 million a year, 22, and Tom Brady's asking for 30 or more, Brady's not a better option if he's that much more expensive than Tannehill. If Tannehill's looking to break the bank and asking for money that's cost prohibitive, then Tom Brady is better rolling the dice, because I guarantee you what Tennessee's thinking, what Mike Vrabel's thinking, it's a win-now league. And it was like, damn, we were right there. And if we had better quarterback play against the Chiefs, might we have
one or two, just one or two completions. One or two completions. Convert one or two third downs. That game against the Chiefs might go another
but
way.
But you don't think that Tannehill can make those one or two completions? See, to me.
Did he do
why
it?
Why not? Well, he didn't this time. Huh? Did Wilder do it on Saturday? Yeah. I mean, run it back.
Damn, you just compare him to Wilder. I don't want Tannehill.
I think, again, if you're one or two passes away, like, you know, we had this conversation about Garoppolo and a few other quarterbacks. You're one or two passes away from being where you need to be. That means, to me, if you're...
That's what separates the good from the great, though.
But if you're that close, why would you go away from that?
Because you don't want to risk it, because he's shown you. What do teams do? We're trying to... Kansas City stopped the run.
Yes.
Tannehill, you got to win this game. He couldn't do it, and now they're looking at it saying, if we got a chance to get Tom Brady.
I'm shocked to hear you say this, LeVar, because, like, you were a big play linebacker. And so there were some linebackers that made tackles. And they're well, the difference is LeVar is going to make that one big play. And that's what separates good from great.
But we're talking about in one situation, right? In that one game, he missed one or two plays that could have separated him.
He's had a 6-7 year career, LeVar.
True, but how many in Tennessee?
Well, and that's
his reemergence as a player, because coming out, he was a very high-profile player. Going into Tennessee, it looked as though he was put in a situation where he could have success, the type of success, even though he had some in Miami, it wasn't the same type of setup that he had here in Tennessee. I think with that structure, he's all right.
Yeah, man. Look, diving into the numbers, look, you could say it was all Derrick Henry. It was a lot of Derrick Henry. It wasn't all Derrick Henry.
Majority.
Look, 21 out of 31, 209 against Kansas City, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Clean game, you want a little more, but you know what? You're not the reason we're losing this game. But then you look at Tom Brady in the postseason this year and last year.
But you got to also
more interceptions and touchdowns.
But you got to look at
stop acting like Tom Brady is so perfect in the postseason.
Show me when Tom Brady had a running back run for 180 plus yards 2 games consecutively in the playoffs. Just show me that.
No, AJ Brown.
And it makes it easy.
It does. Tom Brady would kill for AJ Brown.
AJ Brown and Corey Davis
it
as
does,
receivers.
Except the hypothetical never works out like we imagine it. Because when you have Tom Brady back there, all of a sudden you start taking touches away from Derrick Henry. All of a sudden, you start to say, let's throw the ball to A.J. Brown in the ways that Tom Brady's more comfortable. Whereas Ryan Tannehill, maybe I will push the ball downfield a little more. I'm just looking at Tom Brady's postseason lack of success the last 2 years, and let's stop giving them Captain Clutch symbols all the time.
You just look at who he's playing with. That matters, man. That offensive line that's able to open up them holes for him, and then when it's nothing there, he opens it up himself. You get 8-man fronts, man. That's a single high safety. With those receivers and as accurate as Tom Brady, that's you're pitch right. and catch.
I just think I was disappointed with Tannehill in the postseason. He had elevated my expectations.
Yeah.
And then when I got – there were a few plays. And even in the games they won, I was just like, I wanted a little more. And I think we even had a discussion.
We did.
About – like, man, you know, Derrick Henry did it all in the
who was
against
he?
Baltimore.
Yes.
And he didn't have to do a whole lot. And, you know, trust me, Tom Brady in that situation is going to do, he's going to contribute his part. And I know he's 42. But again, for me, this all comes down to price. I don't want to overpay for Ryan Tannehill. And if he's going to force me to overpay for him, then I'm like, look, I'm going to try to win a Super Bowl next year with Brady.
You get the cheaper one, you're going to get what you pay for, which is the cheaper one. And that's the thing. That's where I don't want to go upstairs and say whoever's the lesser of the two in value, because that's what I'm probably going to get. Ryan Tannehill is younger, so he deserves more because he has more of a runway. You can build on whatever you say his issues were, which was good enough to get you into the postseason where this team was left for dead before he took
it. Would you take Ryan Tannehill because he's younger, or would you take Tom Brady for 2 years and he gets you to one Super Bowl?
I'm taking Tannehill because he's younger and because I
being
the first
younger
two games in the playoffs
doesn't mean he's going to have success.
But TJ, first 2 games in the playoffs, all Derrick Henry. And we were like, damn, can he even throw over 14 passes? Then they let him go. Where'd Derrick Henry go? See, the thing is, they didn't go together. So when Ryan Tannehill in the third game, Kansas City was a good game for Tannehill. Not great. But what did Derrick Henry have? A bad game.
Yeah.
So now you put Brady in there, you think always Derrick Henry's going to have a great game? What happens if he doesn't? Can he, Tom Brady, carry this
team? If you bring in a quarterback to groom under Tom Brady, I think that if you're not going to look at the guy you already have as being a long-term situation, then you make the move. Because in the short term, I think Tom Brady can improve any team. But if you're looking at Tannehill and you're saying, we want to try to go further and do this and we're not developing another quarterback.
And coaches, you know, is getting fired too often for you to look 4 or 5 years.
So, that's real.
Well, the other thing that I think could be going on here, and just throwing this in at the end, they could be flirting with Brady to force Tannehill's price down.
Like, booyah.
That's a smart ploy. Joined now by 3-time NBA champion B.J. Armstrong. All right, let's move to the Lakers, who lost out to the Clippers on acquiring Marcus Morris earlier this month, but have decided to settle for the next best thing, his twin brother, Markieff, who cleared waivers after getting a buyout from the Pistons. Marcus has only played a few games for the Clippers so far, but has shown some flashes of being an impact player, while Markieff was having a pretty solid year in Detroit.
Look, if you look inside the numbers, there's not a lot of difference between Markieff and Marcus throughout their career. Who will have a bigger impact, Markieff or Marcus?
I'm surprised some people and go with Markieff with the Lakers.
Who? Oh.
The other twin, yeah. I think this is an open opportunity for that third spot, third scorer, third playmaker on the Lakers that hasn't been solidified just yet. Kuzma steps into that role. KCP at times, you know, even Caruso, you know, get a splash in there. But they haven't solidified that third scoring option on their team yet. And I think that's where Markieff can step in. Not only because of his game and his ability to shoot the three, but more importantly, his mindset. Like, if Kuzma's not going to take it because he's going to defer to AD and LeBron, we know how that can be an oxygen-sucking moment in the room. You can't breathe. And you're young and you're trying to figure it out and you're deferring. Markieff is not going to be that guy. He's going to step gracefully into that role. I think it's him.
Well, I think the one that I'm looking that's going to really step in is Marcus, just because he's going to have more opportunity to come in and really solidify his role and what he's going to bring to that team there in the Clippers. I think what Markieff came when he came to the Lakers, I think the big thing that the Lakers were missing is a tough guy. They're missing that guy who can actually come in and grind and play with the physicality of the game. They need that guy who we call that undersized player when the games go small. Maybe if they catch Houston or they catch a Zion or someone in the first round, they're going to need a big physical body, a man, if you will, who could play that physical stance. But I would say Marcus is going to have more opportunity. He should.
Why
have
do you think he's going to have more opportunity? The Lakers have a nice, comfortable lead in the West, or they're out front in the West. It seems like they would have more wiggle room to experiment with Markieff than Marcus.
Well, I think at some point the Lakers have to utilize what they've been doing all season. They are a big team. They have LeBron James, who I think will slide over to the four. I think Anthony Davis can slide over to the five. I think there's more of a role solidified or a role that you can play with the Clippers. And I think his style of play, of how they're going to play, is probably better suited for a physical player like that.
Now, what would you say about right now Marcus being with us, what, four games? Not exactly the same. Not the same Marcus that we saw with the Knicks or pretty much in his career. Kind of down in the numbers. Why is that?
Well, I think right now they have their star player, right? He has to find his role. He's going to have to find his comfort of what he can do. It's always very tough for a player to come over mid-season and then fit in when you're talking about a championship caliber team. True. So Kawhi Leonard is the first option. I think a healthy Paul George will be the second option. And then you can't forget about Lou Williams and the firepower that they have coming off the bench. Yeah. So I think Marcus is going to have to come in, step in, play his role, which is, you know, filling in the gaps, whatever's needed during the course of that game.
Harder to step in because the team is so great, right? Basically, the best team in the league.
Well, I think his personality is going to fit the team. I don't know if they're great. They haven't proven it yet, but they are a good team on paper. Mm. But until you actually do it, that's why we play the game.
I think that Markieff is stepping into a train that's on track and running. And I think that's a better situation to step into. And I'm shocked that I'm saying this. I'm shocked that the Clippers haven't established an identity and a culture yet with this new team. I think they have a little cultural war from the old school guys that wanted to be a grinded out team to this team that's a load management. Everything's focused on the championship. And so I think Marcus is stepping into a more volatile situation than Markieff. All the energy around the Lakers this year, I got to tip my hat to LeBron. It's all positive. Mm-hmm. And when you step into that kind of positive energy, you kind of go with it. And just to me, I think just what you said, I think they got a very defined role for Markieff. You're going to add some toughness. And when we face some teams that play us a little smaller, you're going to be our big and our enforcer, provide AD the protection so that he can lie to himself and say he's not really playing the five, he's playing the four and a half. And so I think the Markieff Morris thing, again, and there's been times, and, you know, Marcus is having a big year in New York, a career year. But throughout most of their career, Marcus and Markieff have been the same guy in the NBA. At times, Markieff has been better than him. When they were in Phoenix, I think in 2014 and 15, he was better than Marcus. This is an interesting deal. I was very excited, because I'm rooting for the Clippers, I ain't gonna lie. I was very excited when they got Marcus. Markieff is a nice little counter move, I think, for the Lakers.
Well, let's just be honest here. Markieff was brought here for one guy, Kawhi Leonard. You need to play with him. He can physically overwhelm you with his size and strength. Kawhi Leonard is a physically overwhelming player, and they need a body to play against him in this series if they're going to slow him down. You're not going to stop him. They need a player that could do that, and they need a player who can match the toughness. When they play the Clippers in the playoffs, let's just call it what it is, it's not going to be a basketball game. It's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
And they need more players
who are going to find out how tough
this team is.
They got a fighter.
The Lakers have all the talent, right? They have Patrick Beverley and Montrez and all of these guys. And I'm going to tell you, Markieff fits in that. We know he's not going to shy away when the physicality of the game.
No, he's not.
I think that's why he was brought here. And now it's time to play basketball.
B.J. Armstrong's back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to the Staples Center, where thousands of fans showed up today to honor Kobe and Gigi Bryant with a memorial service. Their sudden death last month sent shockwaves across the sports world and beyond. And as you guys know, Kobe's my favorite player of all time. So I want to ask you about his legacy. 20 years from now, when I say the name Kobe Bryant, what will be your strongest memory?
I'm going to remember the helicopter crash. That will be first in my mind. It's to see a young person taken away this early, particularly when they were just blossoming in their post-career life, and for him to die in service to his daughter, with his daughter, and his daughter passing away. It's one of, because like Michael Jackson dies, I really don't think about how he died. I think about his music and the art and all of that. But this is kind of like Tupac dying. I think about him getting killed in Vegas. That's the first thing I think about. And with Kobe, the first thing, the helicopter crash and just the tragic way his life ended well before he was done creating his legacy.
Yeah. Mine is twofold because they both hit me in different phases of my life, but they both hit me hard. One is the fact, like you said, the finality. He didn't get to live his life. And I know a lot of people out there like, he's Kobe Bryant, he's an icon, we saw him on the basketball court. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about live his life. That was the sacrifice. That was to build into who he was in greatness to now give that in baton to his wife and his kids, his daughters, and then to spread his love throughout the family to let that grow generational wealth beyond just riches. He ain't get a chance to do that fully because of the commitment. This is my second point. Seeing Kobe when he first got to Los Angeles and that commitment that was met with resistance, met with really like resentment, because he was so committed so fast that other players, peers, teammates, media was like, this kid is on one. Like, relax, grow into the role of being great. Not just saying, I am great and I'm going to show you in every single way. So you saw it happen. 180s in his personal life and the way he socialized. Kobe went all in. It wasn't just the hours in the gym. It was the mindset of my craft is most important. Very few, if any, athletes I remember putting their craft that high on the pedestal like he did.
Yeah, you know, I have so many thoughts. It still seems like an unreal moment every time I think about this. This is definitely a moment that I'll remember where I was exactly at when, you know, I received the call and people started notifying me and my phone started ringing. You know, I'll always have an everlasting memory of Kobe Bryant, his rookie year, when he shot those air balls versus the Utah Jazz. And I saw a young man then who was able to overcome his fears and walk into this fear of not knowing whether he's going to be successful or not. And that had a moment for us, because as an athlete, you have to overcome so many things. And he walked into it. He walked into it as a young player. He did it as a player when he was performing. And then you saw how he made that transition once the air came out of the ball. Mm-hmm. And this young man had so much going, not only for himself on the court, off the court, but he was able to attack those. And he attacked it with a relentless effort that I think all former athletes, but people in general, because every life is about making transitions. And you saw how he was making transitions from one phase of his life to another. And we watched this young man grow up as 18, you know, from when he came in the league as 18 until when he retired in the game. And so many, you know, we always refer to him in the basketball family as the middle child, because your father grew up watching Kobe Bryant and you grew up as a kid watching him. And he was always in the middle. For 20 years, he played in the NBA.
Darnell, I wanted to give you a chance to, what are you going to remember?
Yeah, for me, man, obviously the basketball court kind of spoke for itself. So for me, it's his mindset. As we call it the Mamba mentality. No matter what his focus was, whether it was on the court, whether it was coaching his girls, whether it was writing children's books, he's coming at it full force, 110 miles per hour. And that mentality is something we all can live by, no matter what your profession is, no matter what you do on a day-to-day basis. Going 100% in whatever your focus or your dream is, something I think we can all attest to. So,
all right, I'm speaking in real time, so I want people to be forgiving if I misspeak here. But I was literally just thinking about a tragedy and people being taken out before their legacies are finished. And so I'm going to analogize, or the dichotomy of that is JFK, I think of his assassination. Mm. Martin Luther King, I think of his accomplishments. Mm. Both of them assassinated, tragically, well before their time was up. Yeah. But I think about MLK's accomplishments. I think about JFK's tragic death.
It's interesting. I can see how that plays mentally with you because, like you said, Kobe being a middle child, a lot of us were raised as Kobe yes. was our guy. And then no matter how much you were consumed with his basketball greatness and you saw his transition, you're like, oh, I think the highlights are in front of him, not behind him. And then this as a finality, it's so abrupt before his time. And it really reminds everyone, this moment is all you got. And I think Kobe and his greatness, I was looking forward to him shining greater light on the athlete being more than right. the athlete without having to be a T-shirt or a mantra. It's just, watch this. Everything I do is going to be gold. And he didn't get that chance.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one player that all of the old guys, our generation, respected him. And then you can see the love and how he connected with the young players, how they all looked up to him.
Revered.
Yeah. We revered him. And he had this, he was right in the middle, you know, the Jordans and the LeBrons. Yeah. And he was right there, and he was he kind of mended
the glue
for all of us.
Joined again by LeVar Arrington and TJ Husmanzadeh. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, let's return to Las Vegas and Wilder Fury 2.0. The fight featured the most elaborate and fascinating pre-fight introductions in boxing history. Fury, the Gypsy King, entered this arena seated on a throne carried and or guided by women dressed in armor with Patsy Cline's crazy blaring inside the MGM Grand Garden Arena. That's not the tone or energy you'd expect from the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. Wilder had a curveball of his own. There's no other way to describe it. Wilder played the race card. Dressed in black armor head to toe, Wilder walked to the ring to the sound of Inglewood rapper D Smoke rhyming about black habits, black magic, black lies, black Jesus, black Moses, and black roses. Last week, I took a fair amount of criticism in the Silicon Valley-controlled social media matrix for broaching the subject of race as related to this fight. Boxing has traditionally leaned into the race angle when black and white fighters collide. Wilder Fury 2 mostly avoided the race angle until Wilder's headfirst dive into it during his pre-fight introduction. Sitting in the arena fight night, it felt awkward, forced, and inappropriate. D-Smoke is a relatively unknown rapper. The song is not popular. Its message is complex, heavy, polarizing, and could be fairly described as divisive. Fury was adamant headed into this fight that that race had nothing to do with this fight. Take a listen.
This fight isn't a racial war between blacks and whites. This is a fight between the two most high-performance heavyweight on the planet going toe-to-toe. There's nothing racial about this fight.
Wilder came into the arena Saturday night looking and sounding like he wanted a race war. This was quite the role reversal. Wilder played George Wallace and Fury played Martin Luther King Jr. Fury proceeded to whip Wilder all across the ring and then praise Jesus during his post-fight interview. And finally, in his thick Irish accent, Fury sang Don McLean's American Pie a cappella. This was the Twilight Zone Rod Sterling orchestrated Wilder Fury 2.0. Had to.
or this is what Silicon Valley and its social media apps have done to black athletes and entertainers. The surest way to be a powerful social media influencer for a black person is to promote racial division. It's a hustle that has worked for Sean King, Jemele Hill, Colin Kaepernick, and countless others. Even established superstars such as LeBron James bend to the temptation of social media race clickbait. In my limited interaction with Deontay Wilder, I really, really like him. The young man is well-intentioned and has a positive spirit. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Most people have good intentions, and then they get seduced by whatever climate or culture they exist in. Black celebrity culture is obsessed with social media influence, and social media rewards black celebrities for promoting racial division. Deontay Wilder fell for the trap. All right. Ooh. What did you all think, Marcel, let's get this rolling. What did you all think of Deontay Wilder making race the theme of his pre-fight intro?
Man, I know I was sitting there ringside feeling something. And I didn't know you knew what I was feeling, but I felt something because I felt awkward. Because I felt like, man, this big moment, this huge moment, the biggest of his career, his life, and we're going to take it to this place. Now, what is that place? For me, I call it minor league mentality. It's when you're the best, but with a qualifier, and I hate it. And a lot of people give me these attributes. Oh, you went to Columbia? You don't do that for my white homeboys that went to Columbia, but oh, because you're from the hood and you're black. And then it gets into, oh, you're such a great dad. You're a great black father. And I get a lot of that response. And I'm like, dog, no qualifiers. Great dad, great father, that's it. I don't go into any other leagues, subdivisions of what greatness is. And in that moment, I didn't expect Deontay to go there. But a lot of times, pride can be confused with prejudice. So this is me talking to the people who received this well when he walked in playing the race card, that they say, okay, you're receiving this as some form of prejudice or slight, us versus them, but I'm just seeing the pride. But it's so funny when we say situations like this that have a binary dynamic, us and them. None of us are fully us. And none of us are fully them. So when it becomes that kind of play and that dynamic, a lot of times I just sit back, let those who borrow the good from it, borrow it. And those who don't, like me, probably sit back in awkward silence. That's how I felt.
It raised the stakes. It certainly raised the stakes, and it's interesting.
Raised the stakes for who?
For everyone. I think it raised the stakes for everyone in the arena, for certain, and probably everyone that was watching the fight. If you were in a bar around the country, around the world, if you were somewhere and you were watching that intro, it raised the stakes for the fight for everybody that was spectating it. I was sitting next to Marcellus. And it's interesting because the minute that the music started and you started hearing the lyrics for Deontay's song, I felt the energy shift. Mm. I felt it. And now it went from Deontay Wilder coming in to fight Tyson Fury to now, no matter what side you were on, especially as a black person, which I have no problem with my pride in being a black person, but I just wanted to be a sports fight fan for the fight. And when that music came on, I immediately had to go on guard as, all right, well, I got to defend black. I got to defend my blackness now. I got to defend it now. Like,
I feel you.
It's on.
That armor come up.
Like, so
what
now,
a brother know.
So now him going into the ring, it was more so about, man, like, what is Deontay going to do? Because that song put the entire racial group on his shoulders, where I feel like that might have played a part versus Tyson Fury coming in the crazy and putting everybody to sleep. It was a mind game, and I think Tyson Fury came out on the right side of that.
I mean, for me, it was interesting. I was just trying to figure out, one, who is the guy that was rapping? And then when you listen to the lyrics, I'm like, okay, once he gets right to the entrance, he's going to change the song and go with something else. And he didn't. And so I'm sitting here, I'm like, what is this? I'm talking to my wife. I couldn't really see from where I was sitting. Everybody was standing on chairs. So then I got up on a chair and I was like, number one, I like the costume.
The costume,
I was like,
was,
oh, the
fly.
Costume
was
cold.
It was fly.
And then you really start listening to the lyrics of the word, and I'm like, I wonder why is he doing this? And then it hit me. It was Black History Month.
when he did that interview before the first Fury fight, he brought race into it and he said, to this day, us as people have been oppressed. So since it's February, it's Black History Month, the pride that he had, and let's just say what it is. Fury's people, like Wilder said, have been oppressed just like Black people.
Yeah.
When there are two different races fighting, it's always going to be the race car. Both of those guys didn't want to take it there. But the majority of the white people...
No, one of them did.
No. But they didn't want to take it there the week leading up to it and play the race card. When you're in the stadium, the majority of the white people, they're going to go for Fury and vice versa with Wilder. Puerto Ricans fight. Puerto Ricans fight
a Mexican.
I don't
think that's true. In this fight, and again, because I went with a friend of mine who was white, and came into the fight. When we were at dinner, he's rooting for Wilder because he's American. We talked, flew in. He's a Wilder guy.
Not all. The majority. I just thought because it was Black History Month, I thought it was odd. Just the lyrics. Like, man, give me hype before the fight.
Your point about raising the stakes starting to ring more and more true to me because I saw someone flip that I'm American versus a foreigner. This dude's an America first dude.
He came out with all Black. Then he was like, you know what? Obviously, I'm not dark enough.
Thanks for the tickets, though. Thanks for the tickets, Whitlock. Damn it.
It doesn't always happen. If it's a foreigner and fighting an American, the American is going to go for the American and the foreign people. It always works that way.
It would have been like, and this is, listen, again, this might be risky for me to say it. It would have been dope for Deontay to lean into being an American. It would for me, it would have been dope to lean into that.
Build a huge base if he had done that.
I thought it was a miss just for the simple fact that people love Deontay Wilder. I love Deontay Wilder. As a fight fan, I'm still a fight fan of the fight. I wanted to see a good fight. I didn't care who won. But I'm a fan of Deontay Wilder. If he would have came in and leaned into being American, because that's what they were leaning into. I mean, it's not saying follow the leader and don't be unique, and it is Black History Month. But some things are you know, I'm talking about this is where we from. Like, I don't need to see a color. If I'm in Europe and I'm next to an American,
you
American.
You feel comfortable.
Like, you American too? All right, what you getting into?
There are so many things.
I thought that was a miss.
There are so many things. There's tribalism, which, you know, really is the originator of all of these factions. And then nationalism, and then man-made race. Like, you know, there were, you know, 500-600 years ago, nobody's talking about race. Like, because we kind of went there with our inventions. But I'm not the best to testify for group pride. I learned this when I was young. When I was walking around and I saw all these gangs, and to me, they were saying a us versus them mentality. And I was like, y'all a little hollow inside, a little empty inside, and you're covering up for it with this group excessive pride. Okay, I'll take notice. Then I got to college, and I got ostracized again because I joined Me, Fi, Me. I played football. Everybody's like, you ain't going to join frat? I was like, nah, dog, I'm not doing anything like that. Respect to the roots and what you're trying to convey. But for me, I'm all right. I'm okay with who I am. So when I get into a big moment like this of this magnitude, everything you do is of presence. Everything you do is of Black excellence because you're a Black excellent fighter. Why do you lean into that to the excess, which makes me now have to pick, choose, or be on the defensive? And more so, it doesn't take full advantage of what you have built. That's the only thing I have pause on.
If Deontay Wilder had been the white fighter from America fighting the Anthony Joshua.
The Black fighter from
Europe. I would have been in that arena rooting for Tyson Fury.
Me too.
The American.
Me too.
But if he had come into the arena to a song, white everything, white blah, 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 blah.
White Moses.
Blah, blah, blah. I would have been like, okay.
You would have been
I would have been offended.
They would have turned you off.
And I would have been rooting for Joshua to kick his butt. And I say that, I'm telling you, I really believe Deontay Wilder is a hell of a young man. Yep. I really believe that. I'm impressed with him. Yep. I think his spirit is good. I think we have this culture, celebrity culture, that's being put, everybody wants to be an influencer, and people they don't even realize they're getting caught up in it.
Damn, that's a great
point, this
man.
Racial division that gets treated wonderfully over social media. You play the race card over, you might as well be Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King. You play the race card over social media, and people they don't even realize they're getting baited. Because it's just like what Marcella says.
This 6'7" dark black brother from Alabama does not have to tell me or anybody that he's black.
Yes.
He ain't got to tell me. We see it coming through the door. We see your wife. We see your people. We know. All these people that's running out, oh, I'm so black. No, you're not.
You know,
cut it out.
And you know, an extension of that too is sometimes it can turn into black arrogance. Right? Now, you're looking at it from the standpoint of, you mentioned Jemele Hill and Kaepernick. Just thinking about Kaepernick, y'all don't have to go into an arena the way that Deontay had to go into that arena on Saturday night. You can use social media. You can use so many different platforms. This is man-to-man combat. So when he was going into that arena, taking that into that arena, you are now in a situation where black arrogance has to reign supreme for your message to stay and remain strong. What is the product of him getting his tail kicked the way that he got it kicked in that ring after that entry? What is the product from that?
I got a text string every day with all my boys from Ball State. All they Kappas, they Qs, just a group of brothers. We talk sports every day. To a man, I don't want to put words in all their mouth, but they were embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They thought that was embarrassing.
States
for this
raised.
Dude to talk all that smack and then get clowned for seven rounds. And maybe they shouldn't have felt embarrassed, but that's how they felt.
No, you should. When you put it out there like this,
when you come out to that music, you just raise the stakes and you have to perform.
We were together walking in MGM. And Fury fans was like, bomb squad!
Oh, yeah.
All up in your face, right?
Like, bruh, you don't get up out of my face with this.
But what are you going to do? He identified me. I look like Deontay Wilder.
You actually do.
Right?
You kind of look like him in that costume right now.
What?
That's kind of like a...
You look like him walking in only when he walked in, though.
That's kind of like a... but you, like it. It's a,
one more thing
I'm
on
like
that, man.
Positive.
One more thing, because it's funny, man. I tell people the most honest place in this world now is your text messages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those chains we got going.
If that was Twitter, it would be awesome.
Oh, Twitter would have stand a chance if my text messages got out. Here's the thing, man. It's funny that the people who play the race card the most are the people who had the race card played on them the most.
Mm.
And it comes into their identity.
Explain
and,
that.
Look, the people who've been questioned in terms of what black is, whatever that is, usually is the ones that's going to flip out that big joker that got a black card on it, with it. And I get really disturbed because it's really almost like we're watching people have identity crisis out in public, and then they draw in everyone. And if you are the one like me who sits there in awkward silence because it's like, I know this is doing something for you, I get drugged with them.
You gotta go.
Because
you gotta go.
I have this, but guess what? This presence is enough to show you what black excellence is without me having to overstate it, which shows the insecurity.
LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Green Bay, where the Packers are coming off their best season in years, but could already be planning for some big changes with Aaron Rodgers entering his 16th season. Green Bay says they aren't ruling out drafting a quarterback in the first round this year, with their GM explaining, quote, "Everything I've been taught, that's where you start. You start with a quarterback, so you evaluate them every year, and I think it's always on the table. It's a good crop this year. It's a good group of quarterbacks. I think it's a little deeper than it has been in the past. It will be interesting." All right. We heard Cowherd say the Love kid from Utah State is probably who they're thinking about. Is this a sign the Packers are concerned about Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, absolutely. The slow drip, as I call it. The squeeze play is on, and this is how they run it. We have success. Not ultimate success, but 13 wins. You have minimal numbers. You've been minimized. And then you don't have receipts to show your greatness. And then they start to say, oh, you know what? We're evaluating all positions. When there was a time when you weren't evaluating quarterback because Aaron Rodgers had the receipts. And this is the problem I always tell these players. There's one common word between being selfish and selfless. Self. So this team concept sounds great. But now a 35-year-old Aaron Rodgers is going to find himself in the same position a 35-year-old Brett Favre did. Somebody coming in there to put some heat on him.
You know, this is a process that's been taking place in Green Bay. When Hundley came out from UCLA, a lot of people thought that could have been the heir apparent to Rodgers. They're doing their job. So I don't have a problem with this, and I don't look at it as being a concern for Aaron Rodgers. I look at it as if we can bring in a guy in the draft
that we can groom for the next couple years. I mean, wasn't that Aaron Rodgers at one point? Wasn't that Aaron Rodgers for Brett Favre? So, again, as you mentioned, the process has to go through the process. It has to repeat itself. And if you can find a guy that you can have in the ranks that either can become someone that you don't have to pay as much, that becomes a guy that leads your organization, or it becomes trade bait, you got to make that decision.
This general manager was there when Aaron Rodgers got drafted. He's probably seen the slight decline of Aaron Rodgers. Jordan Love, I've been out there on the field with him. Boy, he can play.
Nice, huh?
He's big. He's athletic. He can throw the ball.
He's been arrested.
He has been arrested. Hopefully he learned from that. I believe he won't be around when they draft. But the Packers, you have
the
to
The arrest
play.
Gives him a shot. He could fall.
It's legal people do in the California. Background.
Yeah, but he got arrested. He wasn't in Chicago.
Let's hope it was a lesson learned.
Yeah.
Now,
come on, brother.
Mike McCarthy leaves. Aaron Rodgers takes a drop in his passing yards, all his statistics as a quarterback. And so is it the offense? Is it Aaron Rodgers? They're not even going to take a chance. If they got a chance to draft Jordan Love, there's no question they're going to look at it. But I look at it from the perspective of everybody's showing they can win with a young quarterback. If he can sit for a couple years and develop and you can get Aaron Rodgers off the books, then you go with it.
Yeah, my point is what I believe in terms of Patrick Mahomes just won a Super Bowl on a rookie contract and Lamar Jackson just won MVP on a rookie contract. People want to do that. Gives them a lot of other options. All right, Darnell. Did anyone win the XFL Super 6 contest this weekend?
Yes, sir. Huge shout out to all the fans who won some cash yesterday. And before the games kick off next weekend, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Deontay Wilder.
You know!
You know what? Before you jack up this show, I'm just going to say it. This is one of my favorite shows. That damn Deontay Wilder conversation we had. You ain't seeing that no place else on TV, but right here. Uncle Jimmy, who's the big dummy of the day?
Oh, there it is.
Which is why you the big dummy of the day.
Oh, boy.
What'd he do?
Did I or did I not give you the answers to the test? Ooh. And you turned right back around and went to the window and put your bet on who?
Deontay Wilder.
Wilder, okay. And that's why you broke.
That's true.
Look at the shirt.
Gypsy King.
Yeah. All right, then.
All right, let's talk Deontay Wilder, who lost for the first time in his career Saturday night, which is with his corner throwing in the towel after Wilder took a 7-round beating from Tyson Fury. The former champ now has the option to set a rematch with Fury if he wants. Marcellus.
Yes.
What's next for Wilder?
One, to get back into camp and to work on the fundamentals of boxing, not just being a great fighter, not just being a great knockout artist, but boxing. I think he has to get to that place and maybe a tune-up to just test that out. You don't want to test it out against the guy who just figured you out in Tyson Fury. So I think that's the plan.
Yeah, call Larry Holmes. Uncle Jimmy, you got any thoughts? You called it. You're the expert here. Yeah. You said the Gypsy King will win. You got any thoughts on Deontay Wilder?
Can I just be honest?
Yeah.
Can I just be honest?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, Tyson Fury beat Deontay Wilder's ass so bad Saturday night, it became humorous. Look at me, you ever been out on a Saturday night and have your partner pick a fight with a white boy and then get his ass whooped and there ain't nothing you can do about it?
No.
That's not how I felt Saturday night. It was a crying and a damn shame. How you gonna get your ass kicked like that on Black History Month? In front of all your ancestors.
What?
Hey, man, I ain't felt this bad since Rocky beat the black and gold off of, what's his name? Trevor Lane.
Oh, Clubber Lane.
Clubber Lane, yeah. Yeah. Look at me. And then at that point when Tyson Fury was licking the blood off his neck,
yeah,
he whispering in his ear, my prediction's pain. My prediction's pain. Hey, man, that was just a straight-up ass-whipping of biblical proportions.
It really was.
I pity
the
fool.
Let me tell you something. When you get punched in the belly so hard it busts the eardrum, you getting your ass whooped. Hey, man, what a while to come on this show and say, I want to create a black history moment. Well, he damn sure did. And I think we all can agree. It was called 7 Rounds of Slaves. Look here, man. Kunta Kinte turning over in his grave looking at that mess Saturday. Hell, Kunta could have moved better than he did. And he got a half a foot.
Oh, man. Okay. You're out.
Look at me, but this don't surprise me. I don't surprise me to hear my nephew up here singing Fury's praises. That's how he wrote.
What?
What?
See, my nephew think him and Fury got something in common.
Uh-oh.
He know my nephew the Gypsy King. He know that Tyson Fury the Gypsy King.
Yeah.
And my nephew the Burger King. And ain't that merger ain't happening. It ain't but one person on this show that picked and told y'all what was going to happen.
I give you that.
Did I not or did I not specifically tell y'all
specifically
that Tyson Fury was going to whoop this boy's ass?
We were on Pacific time. You're right.
Hey, look at, you constantly making Vegas rich. You putting your money on everything and everybody in Vegas but a surefire winner.
Uh-oh.
When have I been wrong? I picked this fight. I picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. And who told you to stay away from that little psychology major that you met at the Spearmint Rhino last summer in Vegas? Uncle Jimmy can see the future, boy. That's why I'm the Black Gypsy King of this show. If you want to listen to me, you'll make your pockets grow. Aye, matey. You're going to learn today, son.
Not bad. Hey, record drop, I think, or I've never seen anybody drop this
far. Blackberry molasses.
Went from, Deontay Wilder went from a 79 to a 55. Job performance, I got him down to a 4. I mean, 7 rounds. That was ugly.
Yeah.
We've seen that movie.
Dropped him 2 in all-time greatness down to a 14. Raised him in character. I really do, because I like Deontay Wilder.
Gotcha.
Authenticity, I didn't like the intro. Dropped him 4 points there. 55 role player.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I had to drop him in most categories, too. I thought so highly of him. Man, Tyson Fury knocked the future out of him. And when I mean that, future fights, some of them, no more. And some of the times you have with your family, man. The way that fight was after the second round, throwing the towel, brother.
All right, the internet is a little higher on him than we are. They got
Hey, man, my ears are still ringing to this day.